Hello, Stargazers. Welcome to 7th House Astrology, where I take any topic that's astrological or any topic that's related to romance, and I investigate it under the lens of Synastry Astrology, otherwise known as Love or Relationship Astrology. I am your host, Sandra Mizek, and I'm so glad that you guys have joined me for today. So before I get into today's episode, I have a little bit of good news to announce on the astrological front. So the dreaded Mercury retrograde that's been going on throughout this whole entire month, and especially going on in Aries nonetheless, I don't know about you stargazers, but this one's been a tricky transit for me with Mercury retrograde in Aries. Personally, I've had to contend with my temper, as well as everyone's short leash when it comes to their own temper, their own impatience, and just, their own impulsiveness as well, too. But as of this week, so the 25th, which is this Thursday, Mercury retrograde will be coming to an end, finally. And even though we're going to have like a week and a half more of Mercury retrograde, at least for me, what I like to look at is that the retrograde, that the backwards motion of Mercury right now is ending. It's usually when that backwards motion comes into action is when all the trouble seems to start, especially technologically, within traffic, with people's, well, in this case, because Mercury was in retrograde, I almost want to say Mars, because Mercury was in retrograde in Aries. That's where also a lot of people start to grow impatient behind the wheel, started kind of maneuvering in very interesting ways, far more creative than what I care to deal with on the road. And then also, you know, just kind of dealing with their short fuse, their temper, trying to contend with my temper, my short fuse. At least I think it'll start to calm down a little bit. So that will be really, really, really nice. And, you know, with retrograde, the main points of retrograde, so when Mercury kind of stays stationary before going retrograde and then stays stationary after retrograde, usually the two points of retrograde or shadow are really great for reflecting. You know, I think before Mercury retrograde, when Mercury stays stationary, goes into shadow, it's a good preview of what Mercury retrograde will bring. But then afterwards, when it goes into shadow, it's a great time to kind of reflect of any lessons that you might have learned through the trials and travails of the retrograde planets. And this is like any retrograde planet, not just of Mercury. And, you know, for me, I think that's going to be a good time to reflect, especially since we've also come into Taurus season. So stay tuned. Definitely there's a chart at the moment that's going to be up and coming. But for today, I actually found that I love it when we do the Synastry charts. You know, have part one where we focus on what's really important for either two or more people, and then kind of put them all together into the Synastry chart. I just, like I said, I don't know what it is, but I love these sort of episodes big time, especially between two fictional characters. So what I did, Stargazers, because I kind of ran dry as for fictional characters who to investigate, I just really kind of looked for popular characters. It was between Emma Frost and Cyclops. And when I looked up basically the popular characters, all the characters from the Harry Potter books and the Harry Potter series, the movies and books, kind of came up. And I thought, you know, I think we're all pretty familiar with Harry Potter, Hermione Granger, Ron Weasley, Draco Malfoy, that I think a good episode can ensue when it comes to the charts of two of the characters. Now, within this particular episode, what I'm kind of weighing here between the two characters that I picked is really more along the lines of if the two characters could get along in a friendship, as opposed to a full-blown romantic relationship. I really think that the two could be, and I emphasize on could be friends, but there's really some definite dissimilar or definite differences between both characters. Characters I'd chosen are Hermione Granger and Draco Malfoy. So I think this will be definitely very interesting. I know when I've researched the charts, it's been really kind of fascinating just to see the charts in and of themselves and how much they match the individual characters. But as always, Stargazers, if you are new, what I do with part one is that I just take a look at the character's individual sun, moon, Venus, Mars, as well as Jupiter placements. And I kind of assess what's really important for this character due to those positions. And I do, so I will be doing that not only for Hermione, but also for Draco Malfoy. And then next week, part two, I'll put the two synastry charts together. And that way I can kind of read and kind of see where the energies with both characters kind of stand. And I also tend to touch briefly on the synastry with the individual charts as well. But without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in right into Hermione Granger's chart. So the first thing that really struck me about Hermione's chart is that, so actually what struck me, I should actually just say before I completely get into Hermione, with both Hermione and Draco Malfoy's charts, they both have a lot of top-heavy positions in the 10th house. And it kind of really caused for me to reflect a little bit more on what the 10th house really kind of means. Traditionally, in astrology, the traditional associations are usually, you know, how successful you are, career, in relationships, it's how, you know, in the spotlight you are. Power couples seem to have a lot of influences in the 10th house between the two of them. And that kind of puts them more into the public eye and also their relationship more than anything. It's not just themselves exactly that's in the public eye. The relationship definitely is in the public eye. But what I see with both Hermione and Draco is that the 10th house has two different associations between the two different characters. For starters, with Hermione, Hermione, I would say, would be the traditional. She's really trying to be a successful wizard. She'd like her goals from early on in the Harry Potter books is to become someone of the Ministry of Magic or somebody who is of importance, who's making a difference both in the Muggle realm as well as within the Wizarding realm. The one thing that she does contend with often is the whole pure blood wizards that Draco's dad and also Draco unfortunately buys into, that only wizards who are born from wizards can really become true witches or wizards in that regard. And with Hermione, she's setting out to prove that that's not indeed the case. So I feel like the 10th house really kind of plays a certain role in, I have to be the best, because not only is she proving to herself that she's very capable, but I also feel like she's really, you know, she respects her family, especially since this lady is very top heavy. Her 10th house is in Virgo and she is super top heavy. This lady is super top heavy in Virgo. She has some Libra aspects in with the Virgo aspects, but yeah, definitely top heavy. So with Virgos, they also like to really make their names stand out as well. They're not just thinking about themselves. They're also thinking about their family. They're thinking about those with whom they're around. And I think with Hermione, it's not just that she needs to be successful. She needs to make the name of Granger really something to be proud of. Something that both Muggles and wizards could be proud of nonetheless. Now, it's this aspect of Hermione that I kind of related to personally over the years. I remembered when I first read the Sorcerer's Stone and I heard about Hermione and, you know, really wasn't mentioned, but I could just kind of, you know, feel for Hermione in this regard. You know, in the regard that I always was a student with a learning disability. So kind of like Hermione, where she's proving that someone who's muggle-born can be a great wizard just as much as somebody who's pure blood. Or somebody who might be find themselves in between, since there are, you know, like I said, it seems like there are also some characters who find themselves in the in-between phases too, where, you know, there's one parent who's muggle-born, there's another parent who's, you know, wizardry-born. But either way, I know when I was growing up, I was trying to hide a learning disability because I had a lot of ableist my teachers who would place me synonymously, you know, my name synonymously with the kid with the learning disability. And, you know, that learning disability, it's not something that I was proud of. I did not like being an exceptional child, which is what the traditional term is now. You know, whether you're gifted or talented or whether you have a learning disability, you're considered to be under the umbrella of exceptionalities. And I did not like being an exceptional child. I kind of felt like I was big time singled out, that for a lot of special ed teachers, I felt like I was part of their science experiments or part of a social science experiment. I did not feel like being under a microscope, and I most certainly did not like being made an example of in front of my peers as I normally was. So, and I kind of feel like this is related to my Chiron aspect. Whereas with Hermione, she actually has her North Node aspect. They both act kind of similarly in my eyes within the chart. But I kind of feel with Hermione, her, you know, her quest, if we may, to becoming from just muggle born to great wizard was kind of similar to how I was trying to hide a learning disability and just being seen as a quote unquote normal kid or quote unquote normal person. Because even in my 20s, I was struggling. I had ableist minded professors who, because they, you know, were dealing with somebody who had an exceptionality, they wanted to make sure I stayed in a particular box. And again, it's sheer ableism, you know, unfortunately, a lot of older individuals is what I'm kind of seeing, you know, a lot of individuals who were my teachers or my professors who happened to be in like their 50s to their 60s around the mid to late 90s into the 2000s. And I hate to say it, but unfortunately, a lot of older people tend to hold a lot of old-fashioned viewpoints that no longer serve a purpose in this world. And I felt that that was what had happened. I kind of felt like there were a lot of professors or a lot of teachers who should have retired, even with tenure. I really felt like they should have retired when they could have. I really felt like the time in which they had known me was the time in which they really should have retired. But nonetheless, you know, every lesson you're given or that life kind of brings to you gives you a good, valuable insight. And I feel with Hermione, same thing. You know, there's a lot of misfortune at times when it comes down to, you know, the pure blood sort of mindset versus muggle born. And, you know, unfortunately, she has to deal with the prejudice of the purebloods. But again, she kind of comes out with more insight. And what I love about her character and have loved about her character, and especially I feel like this is another 10th house attribute, is that she comes out wiser. It's not like she just, you know, kind of just takes it and becomes a victim, or worse, takes it and has a chip on her shoulder. She kind of accepts she kind of hears the viewpoints, but then sees how she can still one up that person. They might have tried to tear her down at one point, but instead of tearing her down, she's trying to one up, like with Draco, she tries to one up him every time that he mentions something that is absolutely offensive. And that's where I think I see the 10th house energy in her chart kind of flooding in. The other thing I thought was interesting was that Saturn is actually conjunct her sun, which are both in Virgo. Sun and Virgo. But what I do see with Saturn is definitely having the discipline and the principle for becoming a better wizard, or, you know, proving that she is just as great of a wizard as somebody, again, who is quote unquote pure blood. And actually in the Harry Potter novels, I kind of feel like pure blood, that quote unquote, you know, like what Draco believes in, what his father believes in, what Voldemort ultimately ends up believing in, is really quite a lie. There's no such thing as pure. There's no such thing as, you know, all encompassing. You know, we're all kind of a mixture of different people and of different cultures and of different situations in life. And I think that's another theme that we see a lot of with Harry Potter. But with Hermione, I kind of see that she definitely has the dedication and the drive to really, take the insults and one up the offenders. And really how she does this and how we see this the most with her dedication is obviously to her studies. She is that type of person where she's studying before classes even begin, whereas everybody else is just focused on the summer and how, like in Harry's case, how he's going to survive the Dursleys. In Ron's case, you know, the awful trips that his mom and dad are going to make him go through, but then also there's summer, there's the freedom of summer. At least that was like with the first couple, like the first four books of Harry Potter. With Hermione, instead, she's trying to make sure that she can get one of the, textbooks for her classes. And she starts reading, she starts studying and, tries to know everything before the course begins. And I really think that, again, it's really more along the lines of let me be dedicated to becoming a good wizard. And then I also think, too, it's let me see what the class also has to add from the actual book. And it's like, I'm taking care of the studies in the book, which lays some of the foundations, but let's see what the class also brings as well, too. I relate to this as well myself. I have Saturn next to a Lumiere, my moon. And I've done some of the same things that Hermione is guilty or quote unquote guilty of. I don't think it's a really guilty attribute, but especially when I was in college, I remembered I would try to read it ahead or try to buy the textbooks before class and try to read ahead as much as I possibly could. For the most part, there are times where I got a good start, but I wasn't always ahead. You know, you just don't know what sort of professors you're going to have. You just don't know what sort of course is going to be thrown at you. But it definitely is dedication for sure. Whereas many people many students just waited till the class started. I liked to get that sneak peek and get ahead a little bit. But I think with Hermione, again, it's like showing that dedication to becoming a great wizard by, you know, starting the studies. And again, not just leaving it at books, you know, really making sure that she's also taking a look at what else the class offers. I think one of the biggest challenges for Hermione, though, since Saturn does bring challenges, is that as dedicated as Hermione is, again, she's a little book smart and not as street smart and street savvy as, say, Ron or Harry can be. And at times, she gets to have real world applications in the novels from the Sorcerer's Stone all the way to the Deathly Hallows. And she's in every book or in every sequence, she's using whatever she has learned from her book studies and applying it to whatever the situation or whatever the conflict is, it happens to be. You know, however, I just feel as though with the challenge, she doesn't feel that she is as apt as Ron and Weasley, and also as we, you know, if we're seeing the movies or if we're reading the books, we as the audience see her as being. You know, I think she's really rather hard on herself, that she always feels like she can be better. That, you know, even in classes, even though she knows everything, she's read all the whole of the book, the textbook, and she knows everything of this, that, in and out. You know, again, kind of not prepared for the worldly world, until, like I said, Harry or Ron kind of point things out, or even in the real world, it's like she's still stuck on the book smarts. Are still stuck on feeling like she's not as great of a wizard as she could be. The spell could have gone exactly as so. Also being Sun and Virgo, a proper sequence of events, you know, like spells having to follow step by step are very important to her. And with Harry and Ron, they're the two individuals who really point out to her, it's like, hey, Hermione, you still slayed this particular creature, or you still helped us with this particular creature. You know, without you, we wouldn't have placated this particular creature to ride on his back, or we wouldn't have been able to overcome this obstacle. We would have been stuck without you. So it's like, you know, you don't have to follow things by rote memory. And you don't have to be completely perfect, if you may, when it comes to these things. And I think that's something as, you know, with Hermione, kind of going into the first value with her son in Virgo, you know, definitely Hermione is somebody who chooses her friends wisely. She wants to make sure that her friends hold similar values that she holds, you know, kind of making sure that elvens are treated fairly, making sure that those who are muggle-born are treated fairly to those who are pure blood, quote-unquote pure blood, that everyone has a chance, that everyone's, you know, left alone, no one's bullied. You know, that she's trying to better the world from where she left off with it, from where she entered it. And I feel that with her friends, at least sharing some of the same qualities that she does, I think is very important. And I think in turn, too, with Virgo, that's also important as well, to have individuals who look for the betterment of the world. Now, I mean, there can be a shadow side to this attribute. There can also be a great side to this attribute. But I think overall, looking to better the world from where you're seeing it, and at least having like-minded people around you, I think is a big quality with Virgo, you know, Virgo traits. And, you know, somebody also, too, who appreciates the precision. You know, sometimes Virgos are considered to be perfectionists, and in their shadow side, they can be. But, you know, when mistreated, they're usually just dismissed as being perfectionists who are never happy, which is not true. I think the best of friends start to realize that they can also be, being a mutable sign, they can also be very calm, they can be chill, very logical, followed by the book. But that they can kind of give some insight that maybe a water sign or another earth sign might overlook. And I think that's a similar case with Hermione, that, you know, she needs friends who will help to encourage her on, as opposed to, unfortunately, with Draco, unfortunately, I think he would be one to discourage her on. You know, it's like he would take her mistakes and use those mistakes to further gaslight Hermione or to further antagonize Hermione. And I feel like as a Virgo, that's a worst case scenario, and almost I would even go so far as to say a nightmare in that sort of situation. So with Hermione's son, her other luminary, the moon, is also in Virgo. Also, what's kind of interesting about Hermione, just as much as with Draco, They're both born during an eclipse season. With Hermione, she was born during a lunar eclipse. How I know this is that her moon is actually conjunct her north node in Virgo. So what this usually means, so eclipse people are usually very powerful people. We're talking about individuals who are like Constantine, who I believe there was an emperor. I always forget his name, but there was an emperor in 1930s Japan. His greatest downfall was that everyone saw him as being, well, actually, everyone started to dismiss the belief that he was a god and that actually he was a mere mortal. But he was actually born during an eclipse. Former presidents Barack Obama and Donald Trump were also born during eclipse season. So very powerful people. However, what I always warn is that while these individuals can be very energetic and very powerful and very big and full of life, full of the joie de vivre, there is another aspect, though. Like, while they get their successes during eclipses, they can also get their biggest downfalls during eclipses as well. And downfalls during eclipses are like downfalls on steroids. It's not a fun ride to go down. It's like if you have to go down, you'd like to move down gently, especially if you're going to descend towards your death. You'd like to go gently as opposed to going over a rough cliff before you die or before you move to your lowest point in life. So with Hermione, what I do see is that, yeah, she's a powerful wizard in her own right. And she's a very powerful character, literary-wise, as well as within film and cinema-wise, in the regard that there are still a lot of young ladies. I know I was very much empowered by Hermione when I first read The Sorcerer's Stone. I was actually 16 when The Sorcerer's Stone was really made popular in the U.S. I'm sure it was way earlier within the U.K. But I remember, you know, even at 16 to 17 years of age and even into 18 years of age, I actually found Hermione to be like Buffy, the vampire, you know, Buffy and as in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, to be empowering. You know, here she was, a very powerful wizard who stood on her own 2 feet while she had 2 males or 2 boys or 2 men who were her friends. She really could stand on her own. She was very autonomous, and really with Harry and Ron, it's kind of an opposite. They really needed Hermione more than she kind of needed them. And I think towards the Deathly Hallows, the friendship becomes kind of neutralized to where everybody needs each other within the scenarios that are playing out. But I think with Hermione, though, with the lunar eclipse that she was born under, she's definitely a very powerful influence. And I also kind of see with the lunar eclipse, since her moon is conjunct her north node, what I am seeing is that despite the fact that she is a double Virgo, she still has a little trouble embracing the inner part, her inner Virgness, if you may. Her inner Virgo, if you also may. She has a lot of trouble expressing what is in her soul, what is in her emotional realm, her intuitive realm. And this in turn, you know, in overcoming this challenge, very much like with Sally in Practical Magic, you know, in overcoming, you know, the hurdles and the obstacles that she has with her intuitive nature, with her soul nature, which is the same as her son. You know, she's in overcoming those hurdles, she's also encompassing her purpose. And her purpose actually being within the 9th house is to travel more, to be more open. You know, of course, there's higher learning and education. Being more open to more education, to learning more than what she could ever learn at Hogwarts, And that's where I feel like the Ministry of Magic would be a good opportunity for her, or working for the Ministry of Magic would be a good opportunity for her. But also traveling more, kind of letting her hair down a little bit, kind of not being so strict and stringent and wanting to, still not being so busy in reforming the world to have some time, which she does after the Deathly Hallows Part 2, but to have some time to let her hair down, have some time to kind of travel around as a wizard and, kind of see the whole world that's around her, that's surrounding her as well. But also kind of goes without saying, with the moon also being in Virgo, I think that having supportive, because she has doubts and barriers inside of herself, both with that Saturn placement next to her sun and also the moon placement conjunct her north node. So having that lunar eclipse, I really feel that she does have very deep doubts, deep insecurities, and that actually having somebody who is supportive around is really very important to her within relationships. Unfortunately, with Draco, he has that potential with his moon being in Pisces. Even though it's an opposition to her moon, he does have that potential because, I see somebody with a Piscean moon as having a really big heart. It's just he has a lot of gruffness and a lot of hardness in his exterior, and also just from his family life that he has to grapple with. But I feel like they could have a similarity, both Draco and Hermione could have a similarity in the regard that they're both very vulnerable. Draco in the regard that he has a really big, nice, tough, soft heart, or just a big, he's just a big softy inside. And I think, again, with Hermione having to overcome hurdles, having to overcome being restrictive of her soul self and her intuitive self as well. It's like half of herself is present in life and the other half she's still kind of working on. I also maybe feel like inside too, she's still working on the wounds of being muggle-born and really, again, still trying to accept herself. But again, her whole purpose is wrapped around that acceptance, and her whole purpose is wrapped around embracing the whole of her, not just the ego side represented by the sun, but also the soul side represented by the moon. So in that regard, I do feel she is equally vulnerable, just as much as Malfoy. Now it would be up to both characters admitting that they're actually at a vulnerable point, which is something else within both persons' charts. But with Hermione, so her Venus placement is actually conjunct Mercury in her 10th house. So this is interesting. So it's when Mercury and Venus have just both entered Libra. Now, Libra, like Virgo, can actually be very perfectionistic. A lot of individuals don't always see that. However, perfectionistic in the regard that Libras need balance. They need things to be balanced. They need things to be fair. And in my view, while it's not the precision base that Virgo has, it's more of an ideal base of perfectionism, still kind of there. And I do feel with, Venus conjunct Mercury in Libra for Hermione, that basically indicates that she's first off, well, normally when I see Mercury conjunct Venus, I usually see somebody who's kind of like a very, smooth talker. Like Leonardo DiCaprio has this in his chart, and he's very, witty when you talk with him. He's very charming. Definitely you can see where he would have like a business side to him. I don't really see that so much with Hermione. I actually see where, within relationships, I think it just, I just see where she's very vocal. She's very verbal. I mean, she could be very charming. I think she has to let a huge guard that she has around her down. But she could be very charming if she let her guard down. And I really just think with Libra in mind, again, focused on that sense of balance, making sure that she as a Muggle-born is just as fairly considered as Draco, who's pure-blooded, or as Harry Potter, who is pure-blooded, or as Ron Weasley, who's also pure-blooded. You know, to make sure that she is an equal amongst wizards who were just naturally born into the world of wizarding. And I think that it really kind of stands true with her high Virgo principles between her sun and her moon's position as well. Mars for Hermione is in Cancer. So I think this is why I kind of also identify with her. Guess who also has Mars in Cancer? however, unlike me, where I'm 29 degrees and that kind of weakens my Mars position, Hermione actually has a little bit of hope, even though she has what we call a wet Mars. You know, basically it's Mars it's in a water sign. So it's still in a detrimental position in her chart, but at least it's in 25 degrees Cancer. What I do see, with this is that when it comes to survival, when it comes to willpower, it seems that when it comes to Hermione, I kind of see where she's pretty keen on survival. She knows that she's a fighter. She knows that she's unlike me where, like I said, I always struggled with whether I was pacifistic or whether I was a fighter when confronted with danger. I've later come to realize that, especially after last year when I got a death threat from a coworker, I'm a fighter. And also when I was 29, when I was dealing with a traumatic event, definitely a fighter. So, and I think with Hermione, at least she's ahead of where I was, in the regard that she knows that she's a fighter, but still when it comes to the principles of guarding her, again, she relies on the Virgo side of her chart, where it's all about, hey, let's make sure we're casting ethical protection spells. Hey, let's make sure that, you know, if I use this charm to stupefy somebody, that at least they'll come to within an hour or two. Let me make sure that everything that I do is ethical. You know, even though she's willing to stand her ground and fight, it's very interesting. You know, those who have Mars in Cancer usually choose to fight with very peaceful means. You know, instead of fighting with the fists, fighting with words. And, you know, in Hermione's case, fighting with ethical spells that she'll feel better about at the end of the day, as opposed to fighting with potentially deadly spells, which she, you know, with taking a life, she might not necessarily, you know, live with that because that goes against her morals and her principles, all the way around. I also see, you know, in matters of overall just with willpower, she's got a lot of willpower. You know, she's got a lot of energy and some spunk, but I just feel like in the moments where she's needed the most, again, sometimes that willpower, that spunk that she kind of enters in with kind of dampens a little bit, which I kind of feel is the Mars in Cancer. And it takes friends who encourage her to kind of move forward, so to speak. I can kind of feel this. I can kind of relate to this. It seems like we can talk a big talk and bark a big bark, but when it comes to biting, not so much. I mean, we can bite if we're really threatened, but not, you know, we choose not to. We choose to take the more peaceful end, which to me is that Cancerian, you know, again, Mars and Cancer right there. And it seems to make sense because, again, Cancer is very nurturing, Mars is in a very detrimental spot. So instead of, you know, pick up the guns and fight, as what we'd usually see with Mars in a fire sign, we're seeing that, again, that's the fiery side of Mars is quite dampened. So more gearing towards fighting peacefully, you know, more towards peaceful acts as well. Very similar to Mars conjunct Neptune, if you guys have not caught my episode from last week. If you haven't caught my episode from last week, definitely check it out. It was very, very interesting, and I had a lot of fun compiling that for you guys. And then last but never least, Jupiter is actually, it's not conjunct. We see a lot with Hermione and Draco, a lot of close conjunctions where it's the planets are not really conjunct, but they're very close to each other. Jupiter is very close to her moon in this regard in Virgo, in her ninth house. So I feel like with that aspect, definitely she could feel very broadly. She could actually see things, or she can feel a sense of a worldview very, and it can be a very broad worldview. But again, with Hermione, she has a lot of walls and boundaries that she has to, you know, kind of break down a little bit before she can kind of feel that whole encompassing intensity. The same with her intuition. She can have a grand and a very big intuitive, you know, lots of intuitive insight. She can also be very cheerful and very encouraging with this aspect. But again, it's a lot of she has to trust herself in the long term, trust her soul self, her intuitive self, her moon side of her personality as well. So moving on to Draco Malfoy's chart. So from the get-go, what I thought was interesting, so he is another character, very much like with Hermione, where he's very heavy in the 10th house. 10th house for him is in Gemini. And the way that I see it, I was kind of reminded because I kind of thought of Draco, I'm like, well, you know, a focus on a career. We don't really see that until like the Half-Blood Prince, and unfortunately a misguided career at that, misguided by his own father by that. And, you know, having high principles to follow by, we don't really see that either. He just has, you know, his viewpoints of his dad, which are that wizards are only born. They're not muggle born. So that quote unquote pure blood sort of aspect, or that pure blood sort of mindset. And, you know, a lot of the 10th house did not really apply to him. I was just like, I'm not so sure. But then I was reminded that the 10th house also represents patriarchy and living up to a patriarchal rule. This was pretty evident from Heather Ariel's The Fundamentals of Astrology Oracle Deck. She had pointed this out first and foremost to me, and I had no idea. But it seems to make sense because, again, the 10th house is ruled by Capricorn. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. Saturn is all about old school rule, and old school rule is usually patriarchal rule at that. So with Malfoy, what I do see is that a lot of his decisions are made in order, you know, even though his relations with his mom and his dad are very distant, I judge this because his moon sign's in the sixth house. So that's pretty far away from the ascendant. So close relations with your mom or dad or your sun or your moon are really close to your ascendant. The closer the ascendant, the closer you are to your mom or dad. And in Draco's case, we see that his moon is in his sixth house, so not very close to the ascendant, so not very close to mom. In his 10th house, I mean, it's kind of the 10th house is kind of moving towards the ascendant, but still it's a very distant relationship. He probably, you know, really saw himself in his father, as most young boys do. However, you know, far more than with his mother, However, you know, his father doesn't really, you know, we see this within the novels and in the movies, that his father doesn't really share the same sentiment. And we kind of, it's interesting, we kind of see this within his chart as well, that his father is quite distant, or that his relationship with his father is kind of strained. Even though he's, you know, trying to placate to the patriarchal figure of his family, you know, it's still a very strained relationship. And especially, you know, in regards between his sun and moon's position, we can really definitely see that strain that much more. But with Draco, he has his sun in Gemini, in the 10th house. And also Venus is also in Gemini with Mercury close to Venus, like close conjunct, also in the 10th house. Mercury close conjunct, it's actually in Cancer, whereas his Mercury position is actually in Gemini. They're not really within a 5-degree orb that kind of makes that conjunction. So they're kind of close too, but not really there. But with his sun being in Gemini, again, being in that 10th house, definitely trying to impress dad, for starters. So his whole worldview is his father's worldview. And you can definitely see this with the Half-Blood Prince. It's kind of sad, actually, with the Half-Blood Prince. You kind of see a little bit more of Malfoy, and you see that he really struggles to make his father happy. His father, in return, doesn't share that happiness, or he doesn't really acknowledge that his son loves him, that his son reveres him, and tries to love him back. Instead, he just puts Draco, you know, Draco's dad, just puts him in really very emotionally and psychologically abusive situations, you know, to continue on this, you need to prove yourself. You need to prove your mettle to me. And like I said, just a very unhealthy relationship. But I'd say with his son being in Gemini, what really matters to Draco is, so Gemini, usually a son in Gemini indicates sense of fun. In this case with Draco, I think he embodies the shadow side of Gemini, sense of mischief. We see that a lot within the books, and we see that a lot within the movies where, you know, within potions class, he's dropping a bit of a potion onto a former colleague who will turn to a mouse. Or, you know, he's the type of individual where, you know, when it comes to combustibles, he's blowing up half the class, you know, in, you know, by doing something that's, that should not be done. With his wand, he's usually, or with his sense of magic, he's usually using it to bully pulpit, Neville or even Ron Weasley. In fact, I think he goes so far as to bully, Neville to the point where it just frustrates Hermione to no end, where she actually punched Draco in the face, but that's up and coming. I think though with Draco, you know, there's a sense of fun in the regard of mischief. And I think it's just because he's a little maligned and a little misguided with his dad. In a healthier aspect, I really can see where just fun, joy, you know, having fun, having joy, also being educated by the world, finding the world your lifelong adventure, as well as a lifelong book that can be read and a lifelong lesson that can be learned from, I think is also something that's equally important to Gemini. They love, you know, interesting people surrounding around them. They also seem to just love, you know, where they can continually learn something in life. They love subjects where it's very interesting. There's a sense of fun. There's a sense of joy. But they also love lively people who bolster them up and help them to become better individuals. Also help them to learn about more about life than what they can learn from the books and or from what they can learn from books or television shows or documentaries. And unlike Virgos, I feel like Geminians are really far more life, like they kind of a little more street smart. They can apply the book knowledge to life knowledge. And I think Draco has that within him. I really think that deep down inside, he really craves being friends with Harry Potter or being friends with Hermione. But again, that 10th house obligation towards the patriarchal figure of his family is really what kind of holds him back. It's a little sad, unfortunately. And especially, like I mentioned earlier, he has a huge, huge heart with that moon in Pisces. I mean, he can have a really, and I mean, when actually that moon placement is allowed to foster, he can also be very intuitive, which is very helpful for being a wizard. And, you know, again, being very compassionate. I think having a really big, compassionate heart towards Harry, towards Hermione. And really, for Hermione, I think he could really offer some really very deep and wise insights. But again, that's when the heart is able to be open, and that when he's not trying to placate to an abusive father, and equally an abusive, messed up society that his family also associates with, aka Voldemort, or actually his family, spoiler alert. They are heavily associated with Voldemort and bringing him back to life. And, you know, it casts a dark shadow and a conflict as well, too, like a tug of war with Malfoy. Secretly, he'd love to be Joyce. He'd love to be, you know, in Gryffindor. I think, you know, even secretly, even though he was slated to become someone who's in the House of Slytherin, he really, really wanted to be part of Gryffindor. Is what I kind of see in his chart, and really could have the potential to be like a Gryffindor, you know, even though he is considered to be Slytherin. I'd say with Draco, what I would recommend that he do, trade in the mischief for an actual really nice open mind, and really give him some sessions where he is just allowed to open his heart and just feel. And I would kind of ask him and kind of challenge him, you know, as a professor at Hogwarts, or I just, you know, kind of challenge him in general. How can you make the world a better place being somebody who is in Slytherin? How can you make the world a better place as opposed to just a, you know, evil, shadowy place? You know, how can you make the world a lighter place both for you as well as for many other wizards who might be suffering like you? And, you know, to be honest with you, I would also hold faith in him. I would actually hold him accountable and hold faith in him that he could find that answer, that he actually does have that answer in him, and that he just needs, again, kind of like with Hermione, he needs to open up a little bit more in his soul and feeling side of himself. And also he needs to open up way more with the positive aspects of Gemini, you know, let down his hair, have some fun, you know, not some malicious fun, no, genuine fun where, you know, he's not only happy, but he's making other people around him happy, and that he's spreading joy around to everybody. And I know it kind of sounds a little barfy, but, you know, I really feel like that's kind of Gemini right there. It's like, it's not that they're just having fun. They like to, you know, kind of share that with people. That's the big thing when it comes to the twins. While they can be duplicitous, which we also see with Malfoy, you know, they can also be, double the fun and double the information, double the insight, in life. They can be very insightful and very, informative as well. And they can be very wise souls, even though they are a young sign in the zodiac. They can be extremely wise souls as well, too. And I think Draco has that within him. Now, as I'd mentioned, Venus is in Gemini. So I feel like with that Venus energy, the sense of fun, again, that sense of joy can also lead to a sense of love. You know, he could be somebody in Slytherin, the first person in Slytherin, who could do something loving and caring and kind, but also very pertinent and very insightful within the House of Slytherin. You know, all he has to do is really open himself up to him. I think also he needs to prove himself to himself, which I think we kind of see, you know, he kind of breaks off ties close to that, you know, with the Half-Blood Prince. Again, another spoiler alert. You know, we see that big heart. We see the, you know, the Gemini, the lighter Gemini inside when he mentions to Dumbledore, hey, you're the only person who's given me a chance. You're the only person who's expressed love in my life. And of course, this was before he was trying to assassinate Dumbledore, which he couldn't do. And I think that kind of proves that he has more of a heart inside of him than what he leads on with. But I think, you know, with Mercury, or not Mercury, with Venus in Gemini, again, you know, really breaking away from his father's ties, which I feel like he does within the Half-Blood Prince. And then we're starting to see that starting to within the Deathly Hallows. But I think really proving himself to himself and really meeting those secret desires of wanting to be the life of the party, wanting to be somebody who fills the room with joy as opposed to giving mischief that only gives him pleasure, you know, like a very short-lived pleasure within the novels. And then I, you know, again, doing something more, just better all the way around, even though he is in Slytherin. You know, just because you're in a lot doesn't mean that you have to act like the lot that you're in. You know, case in point, just because you're Slytherin doesn't mean you have to be deceptive. You could be a really a big revolutionary that can help the wizarding world out as well as yourself. It's just, it takes a little bit of insight and also standing true inside of you, which I think is something that Malfoy struggles with. Mercury is also close to Venus, not really conjunct. It's actually in Cancer, which I thought was also interesting. I just said in my notes, again, he has a heart, along with the, you know, Piscean moon. You know, normally those who have Mercury in Cancer are very supportive. They're very nurturing with their words. They're usually, you know, they usually stand by their friends. They're pretty loyal to their friends. And normally what they also think of are ideas like where how everyone can get along, where there's more harmony within a group of people. And I think that's deep down in Malfoy as well. He's not that mischievous bully that we're seeing in the first couple of books. I think that's a ruse. And I think, you know, deep down inside, even though he's a big old bully within the first four books, you know, or actually the first six books, I should say, you know, he's just not very happy with that. You know, he's yearning to be a little nicer is what I, is what I'm seeing in his chart. Last but never least, Draco's Jupiter position is opposite his moon. So his Jupiter position is in Virgo, whereas moon is in Pisces. Jennifer Freed, the creator of the astrology oracle, had mentioned that bragging, boasting, and commanding attention and also emotional exuberance, tempered abundant emotional energy. Well, so emotional exuberance, I feel like that's Draco, what he usually kind of presents. But again, what I love about Jennifer Freed is that that's just the baser primitive part of this aspect. So when we get into it a bit better, you know, going into the evolved, he can also be tempered, have an abundant, very abundant emotional energy. So he can express love. He can express support. He can express compassion. It is in him. It's deep within him. Again, he's just associating with the wrong lot in life. And I think that starts off with his father. Now, as much as I, you know, again, with family members, you can't separate from your family. Sure, you can't separate from his father. You can choose to become somebody different. I know that's where my parents had to choose. they chose that they could either be abusive like their fathers, or they could be somebody better, someone more evolved than that. And I think with Malfoy, with Draco in this point, I think he has that decision. And I think his Jupiter position opposite his moon really emphasizes this. So the exuberant emotional energy that you give to help others, I think, is like the highest ideal. That is like the most evolved part of this. I would say with Draco, what's important in relationships with his sun, his moon especially, I think someone who doesn't expect him to be malicious. I think someone who holds him accountable is someone who's very attractive to him as a friend, and someone who is still there for him even when the chips are down. And this is why this aspect of Draco's chart is where I'd love to see Draco and Harry in their synastry charts, and if they could actually be friends. I don't know about Draco and Hermione, though. I feel like they both have weaknesses. They both have a lot of tender spots inside them that they need to overcome. I think with Draco, the fact that he's kind of hurt by his father, and that he's, you know, hurt by his family, the lot of his family, that he's kind of heartbroken with the lot that he has in life, and hence his malicious sense of humor. And that, you know, I think he can start to repair himself if he chooses compassion over, and, you know, spreading joy and love over being malicious. But I think above all, what he craves more than anything, someone who is good metal, or is a good metal to him, and metal as in METTLE. So sorry, my brain just kind of short-circuited there for a minute. But somebody who holds him accountable, and somebody who, you know, challenges him a little bit more on his views and on where he stands. Feel like that is definitely Hermione, as well as Harry, Harry Potter as well too. And I think with Venus being in Gemini as well, again, I think, you know, somebody holding him, you know, kind of challenging him to be better than who he is at this time, and continually challenging him. I think he likes Geminians always love a challenge. I think he would always love a challenge. The challenge to be a better person, I think, is really the key, or to be a better, you know, better person inside, and a better wizard, or therefore a better wizard inside as well. I also think the fact that he has Jupiter in Virgo in his ninth house, North Node is actually close by in Leo as well too. So I'd say what's also important, his whole worldview, his broad worldview, can be very much like Hermione's, in the regard that, you know, he wants to make, you know, secretly he'd like to make the world a better place. Unfortunately, he's misguided by the whole pure blood notion in the movies and the books. But I think, you know, again, that's kind of closely related to his purpose in making the world a better place, especially since both his North Node and Jupiter are in the ninth house. So, you know, just, you know, that better place, I think that's where he would feel at home, and that's where he'd feel in alignment and in sync. So definitely, you know, kind of encompassing a lighter side to him, I think would be, that's also part of his purpose. And I think that's part of what he needs to do as a character. Yes. And I think that's about sums it up. So Stargazers, for part one, I hope that this was fun and informative for you. Above all, we are coming up to, actually, as of tomorrow, we'll be with a full moon. So we can see all the 12 constellations in the sky that make up our zodiacal wheel. But above all, Stargazers, aside from seeing the origins of astrology, definitely just feel free to look up at the stars. It might give you a break from Mercury retrograde. And like I said, bigger news, that's going to end this week, which will be wonderful. So definitely look out for that as well. Stargazers, I do hope that you are being safe, and that you're staying safe. and above all, that you're staying in good spirits and that you are well. And between now and next week, I will talk with you then. Also, for as little as $2 a month, you can become a Patreon to this podcast. Visit patreon.com/7thHouseAstrology for more details.